Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with...
Jose Lana, playing the King and the King and I.
And...
Joan Almedilia, Lady Tiang in the King and I.
As I said, King and I, and it's at the Kennedy Center now through August 20th. Everybody come check it out. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us here.
When did you guys first encounter the King and I? Was it the Yul Brynner, Deborah Carr? Was it on stage?
First time I saw it as a kid. I think when I was 10 years old growing up here in D.C., I discovered the library of R&H musicals. I saw Oklahoma, King and I, Carousel all at the same time.
And how about for you?
About the same age, I saw the movie and I loved it.
Yeah.
But all right. So actually, before we get too far in, we got to tell our listeners. Let's pretend that they're unlike us and have never seen it. Give the quick premise.
Well, The King and I is set in 1862. It's a story about the King of Siam, who is worried about his country being colonized by the East. By the West. He is East. And so he invites a British governess, Mrs. Anna, to come and teach his children English and the Western ways to protect his country. And through that friendship and through her relationships with Lady Tiang and the other women, they form a friendship, and it's a beautiful story.
Absolutely. And who's playing Anna in this one?
Anna is played by a beautiful British actress named Laura Michelle Kelly. She's also a Broadway person as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A pretty renowned one, and yeah. More so by every day. Yeah.
Got a little bit of a award there for playing Mary Poppins in London. So yeah,
awesome. Explain what she's like to act across on stage.
She's backstage she's amazing, and on stage she's just so magical to watch. She does different things every night. You never know how she's gonna say her lines. Yeah. I mean, that's technical, but. She's really great. Like, she's present.
Right.
She's there, yeah.
Now, I don't know if any of our listeners... I know it just... It did really well when in the revival. It was like Ken Watanabe and Kelly O'Hara, and it won a bunch of Tonys. But,
right.
So I've listened to that OBC too and compared it off.
We're the same production as we did on Broadway 2 years ago. But I think people don't realize that the actual show, there are more songs than from the movie. The movie actually cut some songs.
Because it was a musical beforehand. Yeah.
And so, the Young Lovers have two songs in the show, and the movie is only one. And Lady Tiang has two songs in the show. And so I think people who do know the show from the movie will be nicely surprised if it's the first time they're seeing it on stage. It's obviously a much more fleshed out version of the show on stage. When people come see the show, they don't realize how many of the songs that R&H wrote have become American staples in the vernacular.
Hear people say, oh, that's from that show.
Yeah. Exactly.
Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Exactly.
When he says R&H, just want to make sure everybody knows. So the two numbers that everyone remembers, obviously, are Getting to Know You and Shall We Dance.
Shall We Dance.
What makes each of those just so great and so... I mean,
why did you say Getting to Know You?
Yeah.
Well, I love Getting to Know You. You know why? Yeah. I'm a mom. My son is also in the show. He's 8 years old. He plays one of the royal twins.
Oh, wow.
And my take on Getting to Know You is I watch them, and it embraces how everyone, every kid, are unique. And that's the language of Mrs. Anna. And, you know, there's a bookworm, and there's one that just likes to, you know, happy kids. And you know, it embraces all of us and how special we each are.
Absolutely. And then what about Shall We Dance? Because your big dance number.
I mean, what's great is, like, the two big songs, I think, are the central themes of the show, which are Getting to Know You is about encountering a stranger. And what do you do when you encounter a stranger? You get to know them, as opposed to putting up a wall and walking away. But once you've actually met them, Shall We Dance is, can we collaborate and can we get along? Because Shall We Dance is all about, okay, if I go this way, you have to go a little bit backwards that way. And if I go this way, you go that way. And it's such a symbol of friendship. It's such a symbol of finding common ground. Like, to dance with someone, you literally have to find common ground with them as you spin around in a big ball gown, obviously. And there's trust. There's so much trust in dancing. And I think just the polka in general, because it's such this iconic, you know, everyone is waiting for this ball gown to be whipped around a stage.
Right.
Because it's beautiful, number one, and the song is catchy, number two, but also what it means to see the two people in the show that have been fighting the entire show.
Right.
Finally put their arms together and dance in a circle.
With a clear understanding.
It's such a beautiful symbolic gesture, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I think the song lands so well in the show, and that's why people remember it.
Do you guys have favorite songs other than those two?
In the show, you mean?
Yeah.
Of course.
Take us into some of the other ones, other than, because those are the ones, those two are the big ones everyone remembers.
But. Yeah.
There's Something Wonderful.
Which is your big song.
Lady Jiang. Yeah. That's yeah. your song.
I mean, I think what's my first experience with the show was I actually played the Young Lover, the Young Lover's.
Is this Tup Tim's?
Tup Tim and Lunta.
Yeah.
But I made my Broadway debut 20 years ago in the last revival playing that part.
Lunta.
So you've got a little bit of a promotion.
Major promotion.
You got crowned.
Exactly. So, and the funny thing is, because when I grew up here in D.C., I went to Thomas Jefferson High School here. And when I moved to New York, my first job was in that revival of The King and I. So now I've got all my friends here in the D.C. area and my family seeing me in The King and I again. And for them, their last memory of seeing me in The King and I was in that production that back then, too. So it's really a special sentimental return home for me to do it here in D.C.
That's so wild.
Yeah. Very cool.
Full circle.
And speaking of that role, you know, the Young Lovers, I remember, I think it was Rita Moreno in the movie.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy to think.
It's crazy.
But anyway, but those Young Lovebirds remind me so much. I mean, let's go into some of the themes because they, right. I mean, it's, you know, arranged marriage and, you know, mm-hmm. classism and lots of feminist themes too.
Huge.
I mean, Anna basically, I mean, this was way ahead of its time.
Way ahead. People forget that, that Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein were very progressive writers and the time, like almost all of their big shows either deal with race relations or with a strong feminist protagonist in as a central part of the story. And the overwhelming theme of all their shows have been outspoken women saying what they want and being hit with the current society or culture that doesn't allow that. And I think, which is why it's so empowering, because when families bring their kids to see the show, they're seeing a show full of strong women. Not just Lady Tiang that Joan portrays and Mrs. Anna, but Tup Tim is also a strong woman, you know. And I think my character, the King, is only strengthened by being surrounded by these incredibly strong women, and it's a great thing to show young kids that you can say what you feel and not be reprimanded for it.
Explain how Lady Tiang sort of carries that feminist mantle in a different way, because Anna, you know, is really confronting him, and at the same time you're married, you know, your partner, one of many. But how does that sort of play out from your angle?
Well,
you're kind of working it from the inside.
Especially doing this new production, because I have done it for a short time back years ago, and it was more like the submissive Mrs. Anna, this is my duty. Yeah. But this, I boiled it really just down to my loyalty and my love for the king and for my country. And my son is going to be the next king, so I better do what I need to do and prepare everything for him. You know, so when I boiled it down to that, it became simpler for me. Not simpler, that's the word. But that was the one common thing that I could relate to.
Right.
That just made it like, it opened a lot of things for me to play around with.
Silent power, man.
Yeah.
I think we have an understanding that the king is the one everyone thinks is in charge, but really Lady Tiang is pretty much in charge of that palace.
You see a lot of her presence in this show with not a lot of words. Mm-hmm. But you know that she's not the kind of head wife or queen that sits down and orders people to tell people to do something. She does it herself.
Right.
Quietly.
You mentioned the son that you're sort of grooming to take over. There's a lot of kids in this show typically, and they're always usually very, very adorable, and they're pointing at the map and say, "No, Sam's bigger."
Right.
How does that play out here? Take us into the child actors.
You know, we travel with 9 kids, 7 of which play my children, but more so than that, actually on stage. I think what's really powerful, I think Bart has really brought out yes, of course, the kids are cute, particularly the younger ones. They're like, you know, they're adorable. But I think what Bart and I have always talked about is that what is important here is that the king is looking out for these kids. Like, there's nothing more powerful than finding a common ground between your and with someone who may be your enemy to say, "I'm hiring you to teach my children." Like, there's nothing more important to a parent than hiring someone to teach their kids.
Yeah.
Because the bottom line is he's looking out for not only for his country, but he's looking out for the future king of his company,
of his country.
Yeah. So the fact that I think our Chula Longcorn is an older teenager in our show, and that he is on the verge of what could be a good leader. And I think we've gone away a little bit away from the cuteness of the kids to these are the kids of the future of the country. Right. And I think it has to be said that, you know, this obviously is a true story. We have obviously embellished and romanticized it a little bit. But Prince Chulalongkorn in the King and I story goes on to become the most important king in contemporary Thai history.
Yeah.
You know, Chulalongkorn University exists in Thailand right now, and he was the king that brought Siam to become Thailand, to become the only country in Asia that wasn't colonized in 19th century.
Yeah.
So this is really all sort of a big setup to a story.
He's got the largest arch.
Right.
His reign was one of the most important reigns in Thai history. So our story is about the king making sure that he was given the tools to become that leader. And I think I think about that in every scene. I think, okay, the show says the King and I and Lady Tiang, we're all the big players here, but this show is about him.
Yeah.
This show is about how do we raise our kids to become the leaders that we want them to be. And that's what drives every scene for me personally as the king.
It really gets so emotional in the end.
Yeah.
You know, you have to see it. It's in the end where you see him, you know.
If you've seen it in any iteration, it's very emotional.
Right. And
before even sort of the tear drinking finale, when you know the king, you know, I guess this is in his final moments. Before that, the big we gotta go. I'm so curious how you guys do the big Uncle Tom's Cabin thing at the end, because that is something that's just seared in all of our brains.
Completely.
So, you know, run the lights of run. you know, you go across the water and all that. But like, how is that recreated on stage? It's like, it's got to be a visual feast because it's a show within a show. You know?
Yeah. And it's a concept of that time period. Like, you know, you do the show within a show, the little ballet, like Rodgers and Hammerstein had those mini ballets in their shows. It was pretty genius. You know, it was using Tuptim as a talking head. They were able to make a very loud political statement about slavery.
Yeah.
You know,
and she's basically has cover to do it because she's doing it for this, you know, this
entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's that moment she kind of Tuptim kind of breaks, right? And speaks directly to you.
Yes.
And you're like, he's like, wait a minute, is this a show or am I getting called out here?
Exactly. And our amazing choreographer Chris Catelli, he took the original Jerome Robbins choreography, and he obviously has heightened it. But we are using the Jerome Robbins choreography. You can't really stray too far from that for the ballet. The show, the ballet is just as lavish as the rest of the show. It's big and it's beautiful, and it makes the bold statement right to the king's face.
Awesome. What else do we see visually? Like, describe the palace on stage.
Well, you know, I think in past productions, you know, even when the show was written 60 years ago, there was always this sense of Orientalism, because not a lot of Americans knew what Asia looked like, basically. So there was just a lot of garish,
too ornate,
golden, and lots of, you know,
like
garish kind of big shiny stuff.
Yeah.
And I think Michael Jürgen, our designer, he and our Tony winning, I think Catherine Zuber, who won a Tony for these costumes that we're wearing. They wanted to go back to what would it actually look like if you walked into that palace. It would be big, large, bare floors of wood panel. And he wanted to make it look like what it would look like in a palace with these big walls. And there's this, it's supposed to be a metaphorical and also a physical wall that is the sort of centerpiece of our set design, which is what would it feel like if you lived in a palace where no one was allowed except the people the king allowed inside? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think
And the audience,
right? Exactly. But like, and I think if you look at the set, it's beautiful, but it's also kind of stunning. Like,
it's elegant.
It's purposefully bare. Like it's a lot of columns and floors, and a big wall, and then you have the characters all kind of spread out on this floor that just gives you the feel of this enormous palace. Yeah. So it's stunning, and it's. Hence all the Tony nominations that the show got on Broadway.
Absolutely. It's a visual, it's a musical feast, performances, and like we mentioned, all the social commentary. It's hitting on, firing on many, many levels.
Thank you.
Tell me about yourselves. I mean, you mentioned that you grew up where in D.C.?
Springfield, Virginia.
Oh, in Virginia.
In Virginia. So
How'd you get into acting? And then we're coming to you for the same thing.
Well, I was born in the Philippines. Like, Joan and I were both born in the Philippines, but I came here a lot younger. I came here when I was 3.
Oh, awesome.
And my mom worked at the IMF in D.C., so we grew up in suburbs. My sister and I went to Garfield Elementary, Lindbrook Elementary, Francis Scott Keener Media, and then I went to TJ, Thomas Jefferson High School, the math and science school. And you know, I always say Filipinos are born with a karaoke mic in their hands. I think we always sang in my family, and the arts programs here in Fairfax County were so incredible, and theme touring shows like our show go through the Kennedy Center and the National Theater.
Was there any Rodgers and Hammerstein in the karaoke mic at age 30?
Oh,
three?
Yeah.
I would not be surprised.
Of course.
Yeah.
That with all the Frank Sinatra and George Michael.
Yeah. Getting good. To know you, definitely.
Definitely. Yeah. But I mean, I think being to be such an advocate for the arts programs in schools is because I was such a product of right. an amazing arts program here in D.C. And I had the Kennedy Center at my disposal to come see shows, and my parents were so lucky and fortunate enough to be able to bring me to those shows. To be in a touring company now that goes through the Kennedy Center is really important for me.
You saw firsthand how it actually benefited you.
Oh my gosh! I mean, the red carpet in the Kennedy Center was I have such distinct memories when my mom and dad would say, "Oh, we're gonna go see a show." And I would think, oh, we get to go see that big Kennedy Center, the big JFK right. head, you know, and the red carpet, and even driving up to the building, it's so grand, you know, and then to be brought into a world of theater that it's so grand, and so
you're like behind the stage.
Yeah. So it was just really special, and then the Kennedy Center was always a big part of my growing up in the arts.
Such a great place. All right, so you grew up in the Philippines too, you said?
Yes, born and raised, and I.
When did you come here?
93.
Okay.
To join my mom who worked in a hospital in New York. And then I also eventually went to school for economics major.
Yeah, but then a couple years later was starring on Broadway as Ken in Miss Saigon.
Funny how
That works.
Well, you know, just I'm grateful. very grateful for that. And then I met you.
Yeah, and then I was in the last revival of The King and I in 96, pardon me. And exactly the same time I was playing Lunta in that revival, she was across the street playing Kim in Miss Saigon.
And he looks the same.
Wow.
We
how
were
crazy
across
is that?
The street from each other in different productions. I worshipped her. I was like, because like, you know, we'd walk by her theater. I would walk by the Miss Saigon Theater on the Broadway Theater on 52nd Street.
Now.
And I, you know, and she would be, I remember the pose, you're in your like your green t-shirt, you're like this.
Right.
And I remember walking by, it's the Kim pose, and you're like reading, you're like Tam's on your lap, and you're like reading like this. And then I would walk to the Neil Simon Theater and do The King and I there, and you know, it's like, oh, it's cool, man, and Miss Saigon's over there, and you know, and so, but we became friends a couple years after that, and we've always circled around each other in our industry, so.
Now you've collided together in this
we're
awesome
here.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was so happy when I found out he was playing The King.
Oh, well,
and this is before I found out I was playing Lady Tian.
Yeah.
So crazy how life works sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate
for having
it.
Us.
Again, it's The King and I at the Kennedy Center now through August 20th. It's lavish. It is important. It is musical, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having
you.
Us.